email comes from Vesuvi. And Vesuvi.
Oh, yeah, Vesuvi. Okay.
Sorry, I misheard you. Vesuvi of Vesuvi Movies.
Yes. These are always good.
Yes. So Vesuvi writes, thanks, Rob. Thanks, Brad.
You're welcome, Vesuvi.
I have to compliment Diecast Desperado's Boba Fett movie pitch. I'm now obsessed with the idea of Rodian scalps and perhaps leather goods made from such scalps. You are...
I forgot. I forgot about the Rodian scalps. Oh, we're going to be a pretty good night.
Oh, it's always a fun night. The distended nubby ridges and satellite dishy antennae, the shades of Verdigrian gold. I'm sure the miscreants in a galaxy far, far away would go hog wild for such trophies. I believe it was also during Diecast's message that Rob referenced the malnourished Wookiee we saw on Kessel. His name is Sagwa, for anyone who cares.
I love that with rice.
Yes, I'm a big Sagwa fan. When Matthew wrote in and asked for speculations on what might have become of Mace Windu, had he survived his fall on Coruscant, I thought you might enjoy hearing my ad-lib idea.
Let me strap myself in.
Yeah, brace yourself, all right? I've read this one, so, you know, as I say, strap in is probably pretty accurate. During the descent, Windu is still reeling from Palpatine's Sith lightning and Anakin's vivisection of his forearm. That seems fair.
Yeah.
It took all the strength he could muster to prepare to soften his fall. But long before he hit the pavement, a flying speeder barely nicked his skull, sent him spinning, and he landed safely, although unconscious, on a levitating garbage scow.
What is barely nicking the skull when we're talking about a cart overhead?
I think just a kind of a dull clonk.
Just a noise like a golf ball being struck.
And I could what's great is I can just picture him just spinning end over end, just through the air. Moth of fire!
Good save.
His body wasn't discovered until they reached the industrial district, where the refuse was entering a burning facility. Or is that... Hang on. I can't tell if that... When the refuse was entering a burning facility or where the refuse was entering a burning facility. I can't tell. I'm assuming the former.
I can see how one could lead to the other quite easily.
Absolutely. It doesn't take much, I would guess.
No. Just one rogue Jedi had to do it.
A droid detected living matter among the debris and rescued Mace from incineration. That is probably the most thankless job as a droid is look for biological matter in this rubbish. Do I have to?
Yeah, I mean, mind you say that, but that was basically the Ugnaught's job at Cloud City.
I suppose so. But then that's more, weren't they kind of scrounging droid parts more than anything else?
Okay, were they actually employees of Cloud City? Because that's the initial impression I was under, because they're kind of working the carbon freezing chamber, aren't they?
Yeah, I got the sense they were kind of an homage to Oompa Loompas, except, you know, without such melodious tones.
Yeah. They are scavenging, aren't they? But there is also a kind of sense they do work there.
Yeah, they're only wearing a uniform.
Maybe they're working there, but they're also kind of, you know, do some dodgy dealings as well.
Also possible, yeah. Maybe they're just kind of in business for themselves as well.
Yeah.
They do seem to be wearing a uniform, so I think they probably are, you know, on the payroll of Cloud City in some capacity. Yeah. I mean, they might be catering staff and they're just having to go on this. It's just their side gig.
Yeah, I guess.
Never really clarify that, I guess.
Yeah.
The droid removes his soiled robes and places him in a bactopod, sending the capsule to the closest...
Why has the droid soiled his robes?
Removed his soiled robes. Mace Windu's soiled robes. The droid's not just covered in a soiled robe. It's just like, well, I'm going to have to take this off to put him in the bactopod. Sending the capsule to the closest charity ward. I'm not sure what for. They dry clean him and sell him on, right?
I'm picturing that like the cash drop they do at the supermarket checkout. We just screw it in and stick it up a pod.
Yeah, okay. I can see that. For bureaucracy's sake, it's probably easier that way, isn't it?
Mm.
When Windu was eventually revived, it was soon discovered he suffered amnesia from the skull injury. Reasonable. He has just taken a speeder to the head.
Yeah, and a conveyor belt to the face.
Exactly. A kindly Aqualish, which is the same species as Pondababa. She's helpful with this stuff. I know you do. But this is good. This is, you know, for every... This is a pitch for everybody.
Don't mansplain to me.
This is a pitch for everybody. A kindly Aqualish nurse called Bipu was able to identify him using facial recognition software. But by this point, the Jedi were proclaimed to be enemies
Samuel Jackson!
Aren't you from Deep Blue Sea?
Yeah.
A kindly Equalish nurse called Biffa was able to identify using facial recognition software, but by this point the Jedi were proclaimed to be enemies of the state. So she quietly injected his face with a substance that caused inflammation, marring his features to the point where he couldn't be identified. This is like, you know, like a low grade Schindler's List. It's from a droid. No, it's an Equalish, isn't it? So it's a sentient being, at least. So that's at least. When I initially read this, I skimmed over it and I misappropriated the will of hiding somebody covertly to the droid. I thought that doesn't work because a droid can't do that. It's one of the things I dislike about episode two.
Causing inflammation, marring his features to the point where he couldn't be identified. I've straight away gone to the makeover from Team America World Police there.
Nice. Well, I quite like it because it is kind of legendsy. Because obviously there's that one in, is it?
Face?
Dark Force Rising, where
from Wraith Squadron as well. He was Master of Disguise.
Oh yeah, there's that too. There's also Luke gets nettles to the face, doesn't he, by Mara Jade to stop him from being recognised when they're on Mirka.
Yeah,
is it Mirka? I don't know how you pronounce it. Or Mirka.
I mean, let's try as hard. It's a book.
No, it's true. This is true. Maybe I should get the audiobook. That'd tell me for definitively, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So she quietly injected his face with a substance to cause inflammation, marring his features to the point where he couldn't be identified. He was entered into the system as unidentified humanoid male 258, abbreviated as UHM 258.
Fine.
After a couple of days, and his physical condition had stabilized, with the help of Bipu and some of her shady relatives, a befuddled Mace was ferried to a safe house for fugitives. Eventually, the artificial face swelling subsided, but he'd grown a beard. And he wasn't wearing brown robes anymore. He was wearing grey robes. So he looked like nearly everyone else in the galaxy.
Okay. Right.
Although his wounds healed and he was fitted with an artificial limb, he never recovered from the amnesia. So he spent the rest of his days piloting garbage scows like the one that inadvertently saved his life. He did marry, however, a Besalisk. Another note, that's the same species as Dexter Jester. Woman called Brapa. It's not for you, just for you. Not everything is just for you. Anyway, he did marry a Besalisk woman called Murpa. She called him Oomph, which started as a joke because of the designation given to him at the hospital, but it stuck. I assumed it was the noise he made when he hit the floor. Or Thonk. It could have been called Thonk. It seems... Man, this goes from 0 to... So, brace yourself. This goes from 0 to 60 very quickly in a particular context.
Hashtag Vesuvi.
Pretty much standard. It seems Murpa was a nymphomaniac, and it took all of Windu's energy to keep her appeased. He actually used the Force, unaware he was doing so, to quicken her numerous erogenous zones, to which she was astonished and grateful. Well, you would be, wouldn't you? He died happy, but exhausted, in 7 ABY. His simple gravestone read, "Though his work was narrow, his dreams were wide." Oh, man. He was the only two-armed gentleman who could keep a four-armed lady occupied. I had much, much more typed out, but I deleted it for modesty's sake. The listeners, of course, not mine. Hoping my idiocy gave you a chuckle, Vesuvi. I definitely got a few chuckles out of that one.
Yeah. He wasn't two-armed, he only had one arm. So it should have been a one-armed gentleman who could keep a four-armed lady occupied.
I guess so. I mean, it's harder to fix typos on a gravestone, but... I imagine it's still doable, right? Yeah, I imagine it's still doable, right?
Well, that was a ride.
It was certainly a ride on a garbage scale, you know, after a swift clonk to the head.
I wonder where it was going for a minute, and then it wasn't. The whole idea, wouldn't that be brilliant if they did pitch a "We're bringing back Mace Windu" movie, and he just has nothing to do with anything the rest of us are there. And then he just dies of old age.
Yep.
That's marvellous.
Yep.
That's the Boba Fett movie we need.
That is the Boba Fett movie we need. Although the one from last week was pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
Speaking of the Boba Fett movie from last week, we have an email from Mr. Diecast Desperado, Mr. Despadu.
Yeah.
And he writes, "Hi, Rob and Brad. Thanks for reading my movie pitch for the Boba Fett film. Here is my next one."
That's welcome.
"This one is a bit out there, as opposed to the last one, which, of course, was grounded in rational..."
I'll get my five-point harness.
"This one is a bit out there. I call it pulp science fiction."
Oh, God.
"In the opening scene, we see an old land speeder racing across the Dune Sea. Its driver appears to be a very tall Jawa." Which is, I'm guessing, a human of diminished stature.
What's... Does that mean, what is tall for a Jawa?
I'm not sure. That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, like, is that like a...
Yeah.
Is that the same as a tall Ewok, or is it like a small... Is it like an Ugnaught?
Is it like Peter Dinklage in Infinity War?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be amazing if they have a height binary and they're either really small or enormous? The size of a small moon. That's no moon. That's a tall jar.
Yeah. So we've got this very small, we've got a normal size pink land speeder being driven by a Jawa the size of a Rancor. Go. Yeah.
His driver appears to be a very tall Jawa, and he is accompanied by a Jawa of normal height.
Oh, God! We should have read on.
What I like about this is, do you think they're going to use the same kind of false perspective like Lord of the Rings, where they're going to have one Jawa sat really far away just to keep everything in line?
Oh, God.
The driver speaking in Galactic Basic says, the suns have nearly set, Snux. I wonder if we'll have any luck tonight.
Oh, is this going to go a bit
Vesuvian? This could go many ways. Snux, speaking in the native language of the Jawas, replies... Oh, wait, hang on. Which one is... Oh, the driver's the tall one. So I probably should have given that a deeper voice, I guess.
No,
okay. Snux, speaking in the native language of the Jawas, replies, we'll find out soon, Neb. I've decided that the middle-sized one's got the bit deep voice.
Yeah. The only
deep-voiced Jawa in the galaxy.
Yeah. Well, James L. Jones is always happy to help out.
Well, exactly. Spotting some lights in the distance, Neb brings the speeder to a halt. I think we found what we're looking for. Oh, no, hang on, I'm mixed up. I think we found what we're looking for, he says with a hint of excitement in his voice. The pair then get out and approach the lights on foot. Before long, they see a top-of-the-line land speeder parked near a large star freighter.
Right.
Five aliens armed with blaster pistols stand around looking out into the darkness. There is a Rodian, a Quarren, two Clatoonians, and a Trandoshan. Yeah. Two human men...
Don't explain to me.
Hang on, I'm just reading. Now I'm just reading things out.
All right, yeah. Sorry, I thought we were going to go, that's agreed.
No, that's fine. Two human men, one short and rotund, and the other tall and muscular. This is... Is there just two heights on this planet?
Short and rotund, the other tall and muscular.
Stand in front of the freighter and converse.
All right.
Oh, hang on. And converse, not in converse. Okay, that's fine. They suddenly notice Neb and Snux walking out from the shadows and stare in stunned. It's hard to say. Walking out from the shadows and stare in stunned silence for a moment.
There's another vague term.
Stunned silence?
But moment.
Oh. I hope it's not 6 minutes.
Because, you know, like even 45 seconds is a long time in a film for your two characters just to be staring at each other.
I suppose so. It depends if you put music in there. Music can often kind of punctuate that.
Yeah.
And sound effects and stuff.
Yeah. Brian Eno will help.
Oh, so actually, I should have read on. Then they and their motley crew begin to laugh at the sight of a 6-foot-tall Jawa accompanied by a 3-foot-tall Jawa. So there you go. There's your answer. So it's a 6-foot-tall Jawa, or in wrestling terms, 9'6". The rotund human speaks up. Aren't you a little tall for a Jawa? This only causes the others to laugh even harder. Then Snux pulls out a stormtrooper blaster hidden beneath his robe and stuns the muscular human while Neb pulls out a cylindrical object from his robe.
Right.
Oh, my. The group stop laughing as Neb speaks. I have a message for Jabba. Tell him to stop harassing the moisture farmers or you'll have to deal with me. The rotund man says, this is getting old. Kill these fools. Neb ignites the cylindrical lightsaber in his hand and deflects the blaster shots directed his way as he runs up and begins taking off arms with it.
Right.
Within moments, the five aliens lay in the sand with their severed arms next to them. Neb then shuts the lightsaber off and puts the stunned man into the speeder. Looking at the rotund man, he says, I think you have a message to deliver. Shaking, the man nods and turns to go into the freighter. Neb says, not in that. You can take the speeder. The man yells, you'll pay for this. Neb says, perhaps. But if you don't get into that speeder and go, you'll be the one to pay. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon. I don't know why Nixon took that part. The rotund man hurries to the speeder and drives off. Neb then goes aboard the freighter and finds a large shipment of spice and a human woman in her 30s tied up. Ooh, my. He unties the woman and introduces himself. He tells her to wait for him outside by his short companion, Snux, and he will take her somewhere safe shortly. Again, alliteration is tricky. After she leaves, he looks at the ship's controls and finds a self-destruct mechanism. He sets it for a delayed self-destruct and leaves. Are there instant self-destructs? It seems like a design flaw.
I mean, maybe some of them might have like a dead man switch or something, but that seems...
I don't know, it seems like...
They tend to run on a timer, don't they?
It feels like a design flaw for it I don't know. Anyway.
I mean, certainly, as far as I'm aware, sci-fi always has countdowns. I think the closest we have to a self-destruct is really like a scuttling system in a submarine. Otherwise, I don't know for sure how instantaneous those are.
No, this is true. And to be fair, I'm not expecting desperately to know. You know, this is cinema, ultimately. You don't have to have the answers to all these questions. Neb tells the woman that the ship will self-destruct, so she should come with him and Snux on their speeder, and that they can talk on their way. The woman sits next to Neb in the two-seater, and Snux climbs up on the back of the speeder. That's nice and safe. The woman thanks Neb and says her name is Yara. They speed off as the freighter explodes in the distance. Yara asks Neb, "You're not really a Joel, are you?" Neb answers, "No, I'm not. But it's vitally important that I conceal my identity while I defend the innocent from the villainous crime lords here on Tatooine." Yara replies, "I understand. Don't worry, your secret's safe with me." Neb then asks, "So what's your story?" She tells him that she is a singer from Coruscant. She was kidnapped and brought here to be sold to Jabba. Neb tells Yara she can stay with him until he can take her to a friend who owes him a favor and he can get her home. She thanks him and they speed up to his hut in the dunes. Snux snuggles up in the landspeeder's seat as Neb and Yara go into the small hut. Inside, Neb takes off his Jawa mask, revealing a handsome bearded man in his 40s. He tells her his name is actually Ben.
Except it isn't.
No, but, you know, it's fine. He tells her she can sleep in his room while he sleeps on the couch. She says, "Nonsense, we can share your room." Oh, my. As the twin sons rise in the morning, do they rise together? I know they set relatively close together, but I guess it would make sense for them to.
I don't have information off the top of my head, I'm afraid.
No, that's fine. As twin sons rise in the morning, Neb and Yara come out of the hut and get into the speeder. Yara hands Snux a bag and says, "I cooked you some breakfast. I hope you like it." Snux thanks her in his language and gobbles down the delicious food. Arriving at Mos Eisley Cantina, Neb tells Yara, "Watch your step. You'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy." As they enter, no one seems to pay attention to the 6-foot-tall Jawa and his companions. They make their way to a table in the back where a young man sits alone and drinks. Neb says, "Hello there, Dash." Dash Rendar looks up and replies, "It's good to see you, Neb. You know you have Jabba very mad this time." Neb says he knows, but it will be okay. He tells Dash about Yara and asks if he would take her home. Dash says he will, as long as this will make them even. Neb agrees, and Dash goes off to prepare his ship, telling them where to meet him. And alone in the dark corner, Yara says, "I'll miss you, Neb," as she lifts the bottom of his mask and kisses him. They then depart and meet Dash. Dash takes Yara onto his ship and blasts off as Neb says, "I'll miss you too, Yara." The end. Despadoo.
Right. As a cinematic vibe, it's quite short, isn't it?
Yeah. If we wrote this a full screenplay, I feel like it's...
There's three scenes in it. There's the freighter, there's Ben's shack, and then there's Mos Eisley Cantina.
Neb's shack, let's be clear.
Neb's shack.
Let's be clear on
this. That's my favourite B-52 song.
Yeah. Neb Shack, baby.
If you'd gone to the cinema and paid full cinema ticket price for that, for a film which I would ballpark it being 12 minutes at the outside, if they retract the fight scenes so much for each of those gangster tough gets killed 4 times.
Well, we have precedence with this with Neb.
Yeah, but that's it's very short. It's not bad. I'm not going to say it's bad.
No, it's entertaining.
But that is quite short.
Yeah, that's fine. It could be a short film.
If that's an elevator pitch or a springboard for a comic series or a TV series or something, great. There's potential there. I'm just saying, next time you watch a film, just count how many scenes there are, because I'm going to go out on a limb and say there's probably more than 3.
Well, you know, when you write your screenplay, you can nitpick.
Yeah. I'm not allowed to write a screenplay. Court order.
It seems like a weird court order.
What I do really like about it is how it connects to some of the other materials.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Dash Rendar's in there.
Neb sounds familiar.
Yeah, the name Yara was familiar, but I couldn't quite place it either. But what I really love is that the best extended materials kind of answers questions that we never really had. Some of Rogue One stuff I think is great for it seems trite now because we've had time to think it over, but the idea that the designer of Death Star built in the failsafe so it could be easily destroyed, that was mind-blowing at the time. None of us had ever hit on that as a potential explanation for the thermal exhaust port. You had. Okay.
I had, yeah.
Okay.
It was one of those episodes where we basically just speculated on loads of different stuff, and one of the things I suggested was maybe he built the Death Star's floor, and then the movie happens. I'm like, no way. Yeah.
Well, I really, but that actually, not only does it have nice nods to Dash Rendar and stuff like that, and that it has all answers, like it really ties together like a minor scene of A New Hope as well, because they find the shot up sand crawler.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan says only Imperial stormtroopers are so precise. He knows his time on Tatooine is at an end. And so he's had to fake his death by murdering the entire Jawa sand crawler.
Do you know that's a fan theory that actually exists? That Obi-Wan murdered them all for the purposes of convincing Luke to go.
See, this is what I worry. So it's getting increasingly hard in the political climate to be a satirist because real life seems to want to mock itself so badly.
Well,
and here I am trying to be like almost like a Star Wars satirist, and I feel like there's a fringe element of the fan community are desperate to undo me by doing it seriously.
Well, all I can say is on Desperado's point, you know, from Desperado's point of view, I will always happily receive pitches like this, and we need something. So Vesuvi's got Vesuvi movies. I feel like we need something for Desperado. Desperadoodles. Oh, that's wonderful. There you go. And these can all be part of a grander thing called Pitch Star Wars.
I love it.
Yeah, there you go. Nice. So if anybody wants to pitch Star Wars, most notably Vesuvi and Desperado, because you have form. Our next email comes from Mr. Diecast Desperado, Mr. Desperado himself. Now, bearing in mind it's lengthy, who wants to take up the reading on this one?
Carlos, I got him before I did. Off you go.
Go for it.
Yeah. All right. So from Diecast Desperado. Greetings, gents. Great episode as usual. How do you know,
sir?
I haven't even listened to it yet. I thought I'd begin by mentioning Dash Rendar. He has popped up a couple of times recently. First, his ship in the Outrider is seen in the film Rogue One. He's mentioned and quoted.
Is it?
I don't know.
I don't remember. It might be a blink and you'll miss it.
Yeah.
CG,
I don't know. I take it as fact, considering it's written as a statement.
Okay. Yeah. That's all it takes to convince you?
Yes.
All right, cool.
As seen in the film Rogue One.
Yeah.
Then he's mentioned and quoted in a book titled Tales... I'm so silly. Tales from Vandor.
Oh, I do want to read that, actually. It does sound good.
Okay, I haven't mentioned that. So I know he was kind of unofficially canon, wasn't he? Because he was... George had always said, he's around.
Yeah.
But that's actually bringing him back into proper mentioned canonical print or, you know, he's declared somewhere. So that's cool. I have to read that.
Mm.
Among other things, he says, Han Solo, if I'm around, you don't need that guy. I think Esh is what Han wants to be, a true mercenary. Han wants to be one, but as Kira points out, he's the good guy.
Okay, interesting.
As to my movie pitch, it was short because I wasn't sure if I could take it in the direction that I wanted to.
It's an excuse I've given many women.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. Vesuvi's story about Mace Windu fits perfectly with my original concept. I called it pulp science fiction because I imagined Mace Windu cruising the dunes with Obi-Wan just talking about stuff and I'm cracking here, guys.
It's all right.
I'm looking for bad guys to take down. As for the name Neb, I called him that because it's Ben spelled backwards.
Yeah, we got that.
What? Don't mansplain to me. I can do a three-letter anagram.
I feel like we. Yeah.
Three letters, of which you only switched two. I didn't need you to spell that out for me.
Ah, it's all in fun. All fun. All fun, I guess.
Shall I continue?
Yeah, by all means.
My story was... okay. My story would continue...
Pushing for some GSW merch. I just don't mansplain to me.
Oh, that's amazing. I want that t-shirt. Oh, okay, so my story would continue with Dash on Coruscant. Mace Windu survived his fall, just as Vesuvi describes, but doesn't get a job or a wife.
Sucks to be you, Mace.
You know what? So all this Mace Windu surviving after his fall, that you know this comes from me, right?
Really?
Really?
Yes. I populated this theory in a question responding to fan theories that we loved on Tumbling Saber, and I made it up live on the spot on the show.
Nice.
And since then, everybody's been throwing out Mace Windu. All right, cool.
It seems weird that, you know, Tumbling Saber's done that, which means Mace Windu is everywhere. We've started asking for, you know, as elaborate movie pitches, and the two have kind of collided at speed. And now we have Mace Windu movie pitches as a weird kind of crossover.
Both shows are on the Star Wars Commonwealth.
Exactly. That must be it. It must be cross-pollination in the best of senses.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Okay, so yeah, he doesn't have a job or a wife. Okay.
One more.
Okay, so he lives as a beggar on the streets of Coruscant. Sure. He occasionally gets into some trouble, and this time he has a gang who sells death sticks looking for him. He goes into a spaceport to hide from the gang, but they also show up in the spaceport. Okay, who wants to take the
baton? He's terrible at hiding. He's really bad at hiding. I'm going to hide in the spaceport where they are.
He was like deputy head of the Jedi Council and is now being hunted by gangs selling death sticks. I just want you to, for a moment, picture the Pope being roughed up by some guy selling stolen cigarettes.
Oh, no.
That's how much of a revolution Order 66 was.
Man.
I just love the mental image of him going, well, I better hide in this spaceport to hide from the gang. And he walks through the door and they're like, we better look in here. Oh.
Yeah. It sounds like the worst point and click adventure ever.
Oh, I can't click fast enough. This is rubbish. Oh. All right. Carlos, did you need somebody to switch in?
No, I'm good now. All right, I have to breathe. So Mace, who now goes by the name Lefty, I may be wrong about that, Rob, hold on. Okay. Desperate to get away from them, runs into Docking Bay and sees
Lefty
a ship.
Lefty Windu! Lefty Windu!
Yeah. It sounds like it sounds like the folk musician you didn't know you wanted, doesn't it? So presumably at this point he's run into the docking bay, desperate to get away from them, run into them again, and sees a ship with its ramp down. Sees a ship with its ramp down. He quickly runs up into the ship as the ramp starts to rise and hides in the cargo hold.
Cool.
The ship is Dash's. Sure.
Fine.
Okay. Yep. He has dropped Yara off and is now ready to return to Tatooine. So this picks up where he left off. This is nicely tied in.
We've got a Talk Star Wars expanded universe.
We do already. This is impressive. Yeah. We have our own EU.
Lefty Windu.
Lefty finds some crates
of
food.
Stop calling him that.
It's in the email. What do you want me to do? It changes back later, okay? Relax.
Is that what they called Anakin during the Clone Wars? For the same reason. Would have been brilliant if Emperor Palpatine had just gone, I should call you Darth
Lefty.
No limbs, that doesn't work.
I've got most of my limbs.
Of course.
You currently do, yes, yes. Absolutely. Currently. You currently do, yes, absolutely. What do you mean currently? Oh, go and kill some kids. I don't know.
In Return of the Jedi, when Luke goes to confront Vader, if Vader had just gone, well, if it isn't Lefty Skywalker.
I'm just thinking back to that bit at the beginning of Jedi where Jabba's just like, oh, gee, go, Bartu, Lefty Skywalker. I won't do the I won't do the 3PO, Carlos, just because it upsets you.
Thank you.
It's all right. So Lefty finds some crates of food and bottles of Jawa juice and lives off of these during the trip. Now, I've always wondered about Jawa juice. Is it a colloquialism? Is it?
See, I have wondered about Jawa juice and then have to stop myself wondering quite quickly.
Yeah, yes. Because it could either be...
There's no good answer.
No, there's not, is there? Because either, like, at best, it's juice that's made for Jawas, which is what?
That is a best situation.
Yeah, that's best case. And then worst case, it's you can just like picture stormtroopers just wringing them out over a glass. We use 150 Jawas in every glass.
Yeah.
And lives off of these during the trip. After he returns to Tatooine, Dash leaves his ship and heads to the cantina.
That's what you do?
Yeah, that's, you know, first thing I would do is not, you know, check in, maybe declare yourself a port authority. You would go straight to the bar and just leave your ship untethered. That's fine. Yeah, of course. Who could resist?
Stop. Yeah. Yeah, stop there or we can't get played on Spotify.
This is true. Yeah, we have to be careful. Lefty then makes his way off the ship and heads out into Mos Eisley.
Cool.
Neb and Snucks happen to be riding by. And Neb can feel Mace Windu's presence in the Force. He quickly realizes it's the one-handed beggar who looks to be very confused. Okay, he seems to have become a beggar in the time since he got off the ship.
Well, he's always a beggar, wasn't he?
Was he?
I thought he said he was living as a beggar in the last, previous page. He lives as a beggar on the streets of Coruscant.
Sorry, so he does. You're right, mea culpa. My bad.
Pay attention.
Yeah, I'm sorry. He quickly realizes it's the one-handed beggar who looks to be very confused. Shocked to see the old Jedi Master alive, he runs up to him and says, Mace, can it really be you? You look so different. Mace, suffering from amnesia, says, who's Mace? My name is Lefty. Neb replies, okay, Lefty, I'm an old friend. Come with me and I'll take care of you. Lefty nods his consent. That's important.
Really?
Yeah, that's important. Really? It's very important.
Do beggars intrinsically trust other beggars?
Bearded ones, sure.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Bearded ones, yeah. Sorry.
Lefty nods his consent and travels with Neb and Snucks to Neb's hut. Once inside...
This is like the Star Wars version of a trash wizard.
For further information, see our published works. Once inside, Neb pulls off his Jawa mask and says, It's me, Obi-Wan. Do you remember me? Lefty says he's sorry, but he doesn't have any recollection of him. Obi-Wan then uses the Force to heal Mace's shattered mind, and his memory begins to come back to him. I didn't realize they could do that.
I guess it's possible. It's kind of ringing a bell for some reason. Yeah, maybe it's plausible. The expanded universe thing. Yeah.
Maybe did Silgal heal a mind using the Force? I know she healed other things. She removed poison, didn't she?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not sounding completely alien to me, put it that way.
No, exactly. Well, I mean, it is Star Wars, ultimately. It's Wizards in Space.
Wizards and
Beggars in Space, it turns out.
Yeah.
Beggar Wizards.
Yeah, exactly.
Wizard Beggars, yeah.
Mace then says, Obi-Wan, I remember you now. Where's Anakin? He cut my hand off. Oh, hence the name.
This is just a thumbnail sketch, yes. But still better dialogue than Attack of the Clones.
Obi-Wan tells Mace about his fight with Anakin and how he is now Darth Vader and everything else that has happened. Mace then asks, you mean to tell me you didn't kill that little punk when you had the chance? Obi-Wan replies, I'm sorry, Mace. I just couldn't do it. He was like a brother to me. Mace then says, just let me at him. I'll put him out of his misery. I need a new lightsaber, though. He's already on the scrounge. Look at this. Clearly the reflexes don't die. Obi-Wan goes into his trunk and pulls out a lightsaber. Oh, my.
Into his trunk?
Yeah.
Pulls it out of his rear end?
"This is Anakin's lightsaber. I wanted to give it to his son Luke, but I guess you can have it if you want it."
It's all macho muchness.
Yeah, I suppose if you think about it, his reasons for giving it to Luke are pretty tenuous as well.
I made a strange noise here, but
Bob Goldthwait's joined us temporarily for Talk Stars. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Mace grabs the lightsaber with his left hand. Oh my.
Right, that is an unnecessary adjective.
He's just being redundant at this point. Yeah. You're damn right I want it. I'll kill him with his own weapon. Oh my. Obi-Wan replies, "Relax, old friend. You need to train using a lightsaber in your left hand. You need to let go of your anger. It will lead you to the dark side." Mace replies, "Now you're sounding like Yoda, but maybe you're right. Maybe I do need to let go of this anger." Mace then spends some time training and becomes quite good with the lightsaber in his left hand. Mace decides he must confront Darth Vader. After taking down several criminals, Mace amasses a large sum of credits and pays Dash to find out where Darth Vader spends a lot of time. Because, of course, Dash Rendar is the ultimate Darth Vader superfan, so he'll know.
Yeah.
Dash manages to find out about Vader's castle of Mustafar, and Mace pays Dash to take him there.
Yeah,
exactly. You know.
Yeah, he's not just gone, "Oh yeah, it's Mustafar, mate."
Although I would love to see that as the actual scene. It says, "Have you any idea where Darth Vader, Mustafar?"
That's it. Cut.
Any castle.
Yeah, Darth Vader's castle.
Yeah, no need.
Neon lights.
Yeah, Darth Vader's castle on Mustafar. Oh, is that where Darth Vader spends his time? Darth Vader's castle. Is that what he calls it? Darth Vader's castle.
And it's apt, considering they just announced the Lego set.
This is true. There you go. Yeah. So, you know, this is... Yeah. It's almost as if it's tied into Despardieu's movie pitch. Almost.
Yeah. You can't miss it. It's the last house on the not right.
Desperado.
All right, so after Dash drops Mace off on Mustafar, I'm surprised he didn't stick around.
Exactly.
To be accurate when they're
screaming outside. Screaming outside the gate, like a screaming teenage girl outside the gate. It's like Vader mania has swept the outer rim.
It's Mace just standing outside the castle holding a boombox up.
After Dash drops Mace off on Mustafar, Mace makes his way to Vader's castle, as opposed to all the other castles that line that road, and uses the Force...
Oh, God, imagine if there is!
Massimedes castle.
It's a minor Star Wars, isn't it? There's Forlom's bungalow at the end.
I like the idea of reshooting Rogue One with this in mind, and just having Krennic land on Mustafar, and he's walking along and it's like, which one is Vader's?
Yeah, exactly.
It occurs to me I didn't ask before I left.
Yeah. He's got a postcode.
Mace makes his way to Vader's castle and uses the Force to get past his security and into the castle. Mace walks around looking for Vader when he suddenly feels the Dark Lord's presence. I thought he was going to run into that gang again. Vader steps out of the shadows. What was he doing in the shadows in his own house?
Normally he's just tidying in his own back to take privileged Ugnaughts comes to wake him up.
Yeah. Vader steps out of the shadows and says, "Windu, you should have stayed dead." Mace replies, "I have some unfinished business to take care of first, Anakin."
Why doesn't Lefty get an accent?
That's a good question. Well, I feel like it's wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Theoretically, I could pull off the most perfect Sam Jackson and it would still feel inherently wrong.
Yeah.
That's so just on the off chance, I'm not going to take my chances.
Yeah.
Vader then says, "Anakin Skywalker is dead." To which Mace replies, "Not yet, but he will be." And he pulls out Anakin's lightsaber and charges into battle against the Dark Lord of the Sith. I can imagine that being good.
I'll watch that.
A one-armed man against a robot.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, but they'd have to do it with Dave Prowse, because otherwise it's just not Darth Vader, is it?
No.
After a savage battle, Vader kills Mace, but is himself ravaged. Oh, my. His minions remove him from his heavily damaged armor. Oh, my. And take him to his Bacta tank to heal.
So is that where he is in Rogue One?
Maybe.
One
of them also finds Anakin's lightsaber and puts it away to give to Vader after he's able to come out of his back to tank.
I know what part three of this saga is going to be. Obi-Wan getting the lightsaber back.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I want to see that.
And I like the idea that they take the lightsaber and put it away to give to him after it. When you've had a nice little back to nap, you can have a lightsaber. I want it now.
Well, you can have it now.
Yeah, but you can't have it now. You're going to have to wait till you've had a sleep. I'm not sleepy. I'm largely mechanical now. I don't really sleep so much. I'm also filled with rage. Anyway, the end. May the force be with you, Desperado.
I'm on part three. That was
wonderful. Wonderful stuff. And if there
episode is episode 3.5 backstroke of the left.
I really want to know how this ends, because as you say, we've got some threads we need to tie up. The lightsaber needs to find its way back to Obi-Wan.
We need to hear how this wraps up.
Absolutely.
So Obi-Wan,
please do.
That could be it. So the Kenobi film is going to be like, Obi-Wan's going to get off of Tatooine just to go to Mustafar.
I guess so. But then, surely, I don't know. Well, I mean, this is going to be the fun of finding out, right?
I'm excited.
I'm going to spoil it for you. What happens is he gets there, but no one's there because Vader's on his Star Destroyer.
Right.
So he just rifles through his underwear drawer, finds the lightsaber, and goes back.
Oh, that's man. It, that's just such an anticlimax.
I know.
You've ruined my Star Wars.
As did Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, well.
No,
that's fine. Well, Desperado, as always, thank you very much for sending that over. That was wonderful. That is you spin a good yarn, my man. And I would very much
love you.
Yeah.
Never stop writing in.
No, exactly. And let's say, movie pitches are, they seem to be finding their way increasingly into the show notes. And I couldn't be happier about
it. There seems to be a fashion at the moment. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this. And it will pass the time admirably until episode 9 comes out, at which point we'll all go, I really wanted. It's good, it's good and all, but what I really wanted was a left-handed Mace Windu fighting Darth Vader on Mustafar after bumbling through and running into the gang every 5 minutes. Which gang? The gang. Exactly. Just the gang. Our next email comes from, you guessed it.
Oh, God. Oh.
Diecast Desperado.
Hello, Desperado.
Mr. Desperado, we bid you welcome. Greetings, gents. Thank you again for reading my movie pitches on your podcast. Your reading of part two was so funny, I had to wipe the tears from my eyes because I was laughing so hard. High praise indeed.
Yeah.
I've written part three.
I just want to say, as comedians, that's what we live for.
Oh, yeah, totally. That's the best reaction we could possibly get.
Yeah, totally.
I've written part three of pulp science fiction to tie up the loose end that is Anakin's lightsaber, so here it is.
Let me strap myself in. All right.
It is 8 years since Obi-Wan encountered Mace Windu and gave him Anakin's lightsaber.
Right.
Snux has died in a fight with Jabba's goons, and Obi-Wan has stopped masquerading as a Jawa and now spends his day in quiet contemplation.
Has he realised it's kind of racially inappropriate, do you think?
I don't know. I feel like he just realised he wasn't very good at it then. Hello there. I mean, Utini. And we're back. So something happened there on the technical level. We, that joke broke the internet.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So he spends his days in quiet contemplation after not being a very good Jawa because he speaks basic with a heavy British accent. So our story begins in deep space.
I just pictured him trying to speak Jawa.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
I mean, with a slight accent, of course.
Yes.
So, our story begins out in deep space. A shuttle leaves the orbit of an outer rim world and makes the jump to hyperspace. Inside, Ahsoka pilots the craft now heading for Lothal.
Point.
She hopes to meet up with Ezra. She hasn't seen him since he saved her life by pulling her into the world between worlds during her battle with Darth Vader. Point. Okay. Mild spoilers for Rebels Series 4.
I should have watched it.
Plenty of time. As she speeds along, she suddenly feels a disturbance in the Force. Somebody's pretending to be an unconvincing Jawa somewhere. She has that weird tick. Thinking it would be wise to stop and contemplate its meaning, she brings the shuttle out of hyperspace and finds herself near Tatooine. So she heads to the desert planet to meditate and commune with the Force.
Why?
I don't know why it's strong there.
Why?
Yeah, I'm not sure why.
Okay, okay, well, it's the last two, once, you know, two of the last Jedi left alive, I guess, are living there.
I suppose so, yeah. That's, there is that. Landing the shuttle in the Dune Sea, she sets out beneath the Twin Suns and concentrates on the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Not far from this scene, Obi-Wan is preparing lunch for himself when he hears a familiar voice from behind him.
Stir, whipster, whipster, whipster.
So it's three parts Angel Delight. This will be a nice, this will be a wonderful treat. Obi-Wan is preparing lunch for himself when he hears a familiar voice from behind him. He turns to see the shimmering form of Qui-Gon standing in his hut. Master, the exiled Jedi excitedly claims. Yes, Obi-Wan, it is I. Obi-Wan then says, Master Yoda told me I would be able to commune with you, but I never imagined I would see you so clearly. I feel like Qui-Gon, well, you're messing up the Angel Delight. It's four parts. Qui-Gon continues.
A few weeks ago, we were talking about actors who've crossed over from DC to Star Wars, and we completely neglected to name Liam Neeson.
Because of?
Ra's al Ghul and Qui-Gon Jinn.
Of course. How did I miss that? Batman Begins is my favourite really one.
My dad pointed it out while we were doing Fire When Ready.
Well, don't I feel like a prize fool?
Yeah, same.
Qui-Gon continues. There are many mysteries in the Force you have yet to uncover, Obi-Wan. But that is not the purpose of my presence here today. It is vital that you retrieve Anakin's lightsaber and give it to his son, Luke. You know that Mace took it and confronted Anakin, who is now called Darth Vader on his castle on Mustafar. The lightsaber is still there, kept in the hidden vault. Darth Vader is currently away from Mustafar and will be for some time. Quick, he's distracted. Get him.
Oh, my plot conveniences.
Oh, my convenience, yeah. He's currently away from Mustafar and will be for some time, so you must go there and get the lightsaber. Obi-Wan then asks, what of my mission to watch over young Luke? I hear it's what Talk Star Wars will complain about if I leave. Forget them. Don't forget them.
No.
Qui-Gon replies,
subscribe on iTunes.
Qui-Gon replies, you shouldn't forget about them. Qui-Gon actually replies, yes, this is also important. Even now, an old friend of yours is nearby. You will find Ahsoka Tano meditating to the west. You must go to her now and ask her to watch young Luke while you're away. With that, Qui-Gon vanishes. Obi-Wan implores, wait, I have more questions. But his plea is met with silence. Well, forget you then. Obi-Wan takes the old land speeder he has and drives out west. Before long, he comes to the area where Ahsoka landed the shuttle and now meditates. Ahsoka hears the speeder and jumps to her feet. She sees the old man pulling up in the speeder and finds that he looks very familiar to her.
That looks like that Jawa I saw earlier.
The one that spoke basic. He was really handy to have around.
And freakishly tall.
Yeah, really, really large man.
Yeah, like a Ewan McGregor sort of height.
Obi-Wan speaks. Hello there, Ahsoka. And she instantly recognizes him. Master Kenobi, what are you doing here? She asks. I can't do Ahsoka's voice, so I'm just going to do that. Obi-Wan explains to her. I realize I hadn't stopped me with any other voice, but here we go. Obi-Wan explains to her his mission to guard Luke and tells her he needs to leave on another mission. He asks if she would look after Luke while he was away, and she agrees to. This has been designed, I think, to not make us cross. That seems to be a nice...
After Last Jedi, it's quite nice, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly. Obi-Wan takes her a distance from the Lars homestead. They use macro binoculars to see the residents from a distance. Ahsoka remarks that she can really see the resemblance to Anakin. Okay. Well, that's the hut. That's the dwelling inside. The small boy. Oh, okay. Sorry, my phone keeps switching position of the notes. Obi-Wan gets her permission to use the shuttle and returns with her to the shuttle. They say their goodbyes and Obi-Wan takes off. Ahsoka then takes the land speeder and goes back to the Lars homestead to get a job working on their moisture evaporators and to keep an eye on Luke.
Mm-hmm.
Obi-Wan is flooded with memories as he steps out of the shuttle on Mustafar. He makes his way to Vader's castle. There are other structures around, but Obi-Wan can feel the unmistakable presence of the dark side there.
Fair.
It's reasonable. A chill runs down his spine, but he musters up courage and approaches. He finds the door locked and pushes the button to signal his presence. Within moments, the door opens, and a thin, pale-skinned man in black robes asks what his business is there. Obi-Wan waves his hand and says, I am Duke Satine. Darth Vader has invited me to stay here and await his return. The man stands looking confused, but then replies, ah, yes, Duke Satine, welcome. Just follow me and I will take you to the guest room. I'm James Mason, apparently.
Good a casting as any, yeah, to be honest with you.
As
I am the mouth of Darth Vader.
As they walk through the sinister castle, Obi-Wan can feel the dark side getting stronger, and he begins to regret coming there. The man helps Obi-Wan to settle in and tells him he has other duties to attend to, leaving Obi-Wan alone in his room. Obi-Wan starts to explore the castle. Oh my. Oh, it's not a euphemism, I see. He literally means castle. Yeah. Alright, fair enough. Obi-Wan starts to explore the castle, but realizes it could take a long time to find the vault blindly. So he finds one of the castle's minions, one of many Fregosians that perform menial tasks there. Obi-Wan again waves his hand and says, you will take me to the master's private chamber. The small Fregosian speaks in a series of chirps and leads Obi-Wan to the last chamber with Vader's back to tank.
Don't try and copy it, Obi-Wan.
Waving his hand again, Obi-Wan then says, you have served your master well. Now continue with your duties. The Fregosian chirps again and scurries off, leaving Obi-Wan in the chamber. Obi-Wan manages to locate a vault in the wall and uses the Force to open it. Inside, he finds Anakin's lightsaber and grabs it, clipping it to his belt. As he turns to leave, he sees something that fills him with dread. It's Darth Vader standing between him and the door. He can hear his mechanical breathing as Vader pulls out and ignites his lightsaber. Obi-Wan realizes there is only one choice and pulls out his own lightsaber. Oh my. Vader merely stands before the door as if he were mocking Obi-Wan. The old Jedi calmly walks up to him and raises his lightsaber. He then swings it at Vader, striking his face mask. Part of the mask comes off and he sees Luke's face within. A moment later, Vader disappears in a puff of smoke. Nothing off my sleeve.
That was a wonderful atmospheric moment until he went 1920s vaudeville magician.
Nothing up my sleeve, Obi-Wan. And Obi-Wan hurries out of the castle and back to the shuttle.
Will any gentleman here have a handkerchief? No. No.
It's a rabbit. No. Oh, dear. I should have fed it. He quickly launches and returns to Tatooine.
Sorry, Jackson.
He quickly launches and returns to Tatooine. He walks out to the Lars homestead and finds Ahsoka working on an evaporator. She informs him
her contribution to his story has been invaluable. She's turned up and done some menial work.
Yeah, well, you know, she serves a purpose. Yeah. I think we'll talk about it in a minute. She informs him that Luke is fine. He's borrowing Obi-Wan's speeder. He really loves that old thing, she informs him. I resent that, he says. No, he doesn't. Obi-Wan decides to let Luke keep it and walks with Ahsoka to the shuttle. They again say their goodbyes as Ahsoka boards the ship and leaves. That would have been a twist. Ahsoka boards the ship and leaves. The end. May the Force be with you. Despadu. So there's a lot. So, first of all,
Sterling work actually pulled together better than some Star Wars movies do.
Well, there you go. So there's a couple of things I really liked about this. Mm-hmm. I liked the Qui-Gon Obi-Wan banter. Mm-hmm. I wish there'd been more kind of, you know, Just have a pop at Obi-Wan Qui-Gon. What's he going to do?
Yeah.
You're a ghost. And I really liked the callback to Empire Strikes Back, where he has the vision of Vader and then it's Luke inside, as if to say, like, the risk is that he's going to fail again as a teacher and he's going to end up with a dark Jedi, a failure.
The puff of smoke aside, it was...
Yeah, the puff of smoke a touch...
Unless it's a typo for puff of Snoke.
Oh, twist, son.
Yeah.
Now we're talking. See? With the mouths and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good that. But yeah, it's... There's a lot...
The Ahsoka thing bugs me, because, I mean, much like we've said before about whether or not they should put Thrawn in episode 9, I kind of like feel if this was a genuine movie release, Ahsoka's presence would confuse most moviegoers and kind of just annoy those who did know the character because she didn't actually do anything.
Yeah, her existence does seem to be, I'm here so that Ben can leave and not make Talk Star Wars cross.
Which is a valid goal.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if... Finally, Kath wants to take our input on board.
Yeah, by all means, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
she knows who we are. She listens to all the podcasts.
Exactly. She must. That must be what she spends her day doing. That's what I'd do.
I mean, she's got a test for market, surely.
Yeah. And I imagine, I mean, obviously, I'm sure there are meetings and things like that.
Yeah.
But I think realistically, most of the day is spent consuming Star Wars media.
Yep.
And obviously, we are certainly one of those.
Yeah. So, and she's got a massive tattoo of a Tatooine Suns logo.
Yeah, there you go. So I believe that. I fully believe that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
She loves those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Who doesn't?
Oh, totally.
Tatooine daughters. They're big beef. So, yeah, there's a couple of things. There are a little bit of, you know, like you say, a little bit too tidy, you know, like having Ahsoka just turn up, like, you know, do you need me to watch the kids while you go off and have an adventure?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it'd be lovely.
That's what it felt like, wasn't it?
And do you want Ahsoka to have a bit more of a role, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a weird... It'd be weird bringing Ahsoka into a cinematic universe by this point. Cinematic universe, you know what I mean? Cinema-going perception. Because although Ahsoka did have a cinematic release in the Clone Wars movie, that wasn't a very good cinematic release. It didn't do fantastically well. It didn't even do Solo numbers.
No, it didn't. This is true. I mean, probably the budget was significantly smaller because Solo went massively
As a proportion, it was less of a problem than Solo was. But in terms of dollars generated, I think Solo probably beat it.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, and I mean, deservedly so, in my opinion, certainly. But, you know, because I feel that, you know, as we discussed, Clone Wars movie is my least favourite one because I couldn't tell you anything about it.
That's totally fair. I know it got a cinema release, but I have difficulty making it a cinema because it is so obviously three episodes of a TV show stapled together.
Yeah, I do get what you mean. I don't remember it being that long either. Probably because it was three episodes of the TV show stuck together.
Yeah, I think it probably is only like 75, 80 minutes. Yeah, probably three episodes with some extra scenes added in.
Yeah.
Yes, it probably is only about 80 minutes.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, you know, Desperado, thank you so much for writing that trilogy.
As always, man.
Yeah, and please, you know, don't stop there. Just because this story has been resolved, we wanna hear more. We do, you know. And I'm not saying like one every week. That would be unrealistic. You have to kind of work when the creative juices flow. We get that. You know, we are both creatives, so we understand.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you have a good idea, fire it on over, and we will gladly read it and enjoy it, and hopefully you will as well.
We want a prequel. Rogue Neb.
Rogue Neb. Neb 1.